Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, my name is Mario Feria, and I work for Gartner in a division named Gartner Research Board. And I currently work with DNA leaders from the global companies spread out in North America, Europe, Latin America, and so on. And my role is to make sure that those leaders will succeed in their missions, strategy, organization design, and choose the best of their data analytics capacity.
That's excellent, Mario. Thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast on this Monday afternoon. So just a quick background. So you're based here in my backyard in Fort Lauderdale. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's so funny. You reach out to me and I had no idea where you're from. And then we start having that conversation. And I ask, hey, John, where do you live? Oh, I live for the lives. Yeah, me as well. And found out that we live 2 miles from each other. Isn't it crazy the internet hides?
It's crazy. It's crazy how, you know, things are these days with the virtual world. And I'm sure we probably passed each other on a couple of bike rides here in Fort Lauderdale. So that's awesome. I'm glad we're able to connect. I want to spend some time talking about your current role. But before we do that, give us a kind of a thumbnail version of your career to date.
Okay. I had the privilege to be appointed as a chief data officer at the end of 2010. And when I was asked to become a chief data officer, I said to the CEO of the company, thank you, it's very nice of you, I appreciate the offering, but what is a chief data officer? Because I had no idea what this role was all about. And I had to learn my role on the fly. And apparently I learned it doing a few things well, that I was invited to come to Gartner in 2015 to create our chief data officer practice inside our research organization. So we went so well to put everything together related to staffing, organization design, methods for creating a compelling business case for DNA and data monetization and so on. And in 2018, I moved from my role to Gartner Research Board, it's a new department, to put together the DNA board responsible for working with large and global companies. So I changed from a total research type of activity to a more services oriented program.
No, that's great, Mario. And thanks for highlighting some of the, you know, your background from that perspective. Seems like you've done a lot of great things in the past and now with Gartner for quite some time. I was always wondering kind of from the CDO role perspective, you hear that a lot these days, especially, you know, the last couple of years. I think that role, the evolution of that has been pretty aggressive, so to say, for a lot of companies embracing the data, the analytics, all of that, you know, great stuff in terms of being able to build technology and organizations around it. So to the extent that you can share, what really falls under your purview as you know, you lead the data, the analytics groups? And what are some of the misconceptions, I guess, about their particular role that maybe you could highlight to us?
Okay, so when I came here to Gartner, the first thing we did was to put together a compelling survey to understand what was going on in the market. So we collected data in 2015, and we released the first chief data officer survey from Gartner in 2016, okay? At that point was, we interviewed 33 people, okay? And this year, we just launched the results of the 6th CDO survey. So for 6 years doing that, we learned a few things about the DNA leader, the chief data officer. So the first thing that we learned that, yeah, the role has been growing exponentially throughout the years, okay? So we think that there are probably today in the world around 20 to 21,000 folks in the world with the title chief data or chief analytics, or chief data and analytics officer, okay? So pretty impressive number for something that started in 2002 with Capital One. What we found out about the survey that we did is that more and more the roles of the chief data officer, chief analytics officer, and chief digital officer are becoming quite of blurred. We're able to find out that in this survey that more than 80% of the data and analytics officers are embracing and being responsible or active participating in digital transformation, which is quite impressive to see that. So we have been tracking the evolution of the role, and the first chief data officer were just responsible for governance, quality, the aspects that we call the defensive aspect of the role. Around 2010-11, we start to see chief data officers embrace analytics. And in 2015-16, we start to see the first chief data officers embracing digital transformation. And it's so funny nowadays because the digital transformation becomes something that a lot of companies are talking about. And when we see and notice that 80% of the folks, more than 80%, are embracing digital transformation as one of their activities, we feel that this role is taking the seat on the board that we expect.
Oh, that's very interesting. And thank you for clarifying that. And, you know, it seems like a lot of great intel coming out from these surveys when you actually partner with the practitioners in this space and get their input on what are they seeing in the field, what are they seeing as they actually, you know, practice that, you know, that trade on day in, day out. So that's very interesting. So when it comes to, you know, the different flavors, I guess, of that particular trade, we talk about CIOs, chief data officers, chief digital officers, you know, analytics officers. It's those are interesting concepts that have been evolving in the last couple of years. So what are kind of what's your take on the future, kind of the areas of responsibility for these roles? How do you see these roles will evolve? Will they more be formed under kind of the one umbrella technical role, or just in general, what's your take through the next period for us?
Very hard to predict the future because the future is so dynamic, but we can look at some data points and try to at least put some hypotheses on what you're seeing there. So the first hypothesis would be, yeah, those lines of responsibilities are getting kind of blurred, John. Okay, so we are seeing nowadays lots of CIOs that, hey, they are responsible for data analytics. We are seeing some chief data officers who are responsible for technology. We're seeing some digital officers, yeah, who IT and also the DNA function report into that leader. Okay, so those lines are getting more blurred because the world is not as easy to understand. It's very hard to have one title that's responsible for everything. That's one point. Another point that we're seeing, more and more those roles are being tasked to be people, about people leadership, to become people leaders. So I always like to say that the role of the chief data officer is not to take care of the data assets. It's to take care of the people who will be taking care of the data assets. In our six-year-old survey, we didn't find that. We didn't find this common trait for chief data analytics officers. Those who put people first, not technology first, are having more success than their peers. We explored that, okay? And another thing about the trait and about those roles, at the end of the day, and especially for private companies, is all about making money, saving money, and keep the business safe. So it's all about creating a business case that drives that return on financial metrics. So if you're the leader, you're able to put something there that you have a positive ROI in terms of driving your cost down, increase your revenue, or avoid any lawsuits because data more and more is being so regulated across the world, you're going to be successful in what you do.
Right. No, that's very interesting. And it's almost boils down to also the type of, I guess, environment and culture that the company is fostering and cultivating. Because at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's though all of those functional areas cannot be ignored, and they becoming the strategic partners for the CEOs, for the chief marketing officers and so forth, that it's no longer being in this role of, I guess, support, so to say, where you just basically being most of a kind of reactive mode where certain things happen, but really having that seat at the table at the board at the very strategic level. I think that's very important. This is what you're talking about. You've touched upon it briefly on different trends and the developments in the industry. just overall, and you know, researching that probably, you know, more than anybody in this field, being part of Gartner as well, to the extent that you can share with us the kind of that future outlook into the data and analytics, what's that looking like? What are you most excited about? What are the different trends that you're very passionate?
Okay, so let me tell something. There's always something new to learn about this market.
Mm-hmm.
And this morning, I was talking to a colleague, a friend of mine, who does research on data quality. She produced a so compelling material about telling the end users, telling companies about, don't talk about data quality, talk about business quality. Because if you have data quality issue, guess what happened? You might have higher costs. You might be making some errors that in some cases might kill people if you're in the healthcare or life science environment. So it's all about business quality. So that was a topic that I learned this morning. And why there's so much happening in the data analytics world, John, is because there is a lot of investment in this area, okay? For the last 13 years, data analytics has been the top investment for almost every company in the world. And when you have something like that, such a huge demand from end users, technology players, all the service companies, they try to create an offering in this space. So the pace of innovation is not going to slow down at all. What we are seeing, and that's a major trend in this market, is finally the analytics activity is coming to the data management world. We say data and analytics, but until now, the analytics techniques have not been used to help you manage your data better. So we are seeing the rise in what we call the data fabric, which is quite an interesting component, which is how can I automate some of my activities? How can I use AI and machine learning principles to drive better data quality, to drive a better understanding of the data, to make sure that those AI techniques will help me to do a better master data management or metadata management. So this is something that we're seeing that's going to come up to speed so fast in this year. It started already this year because vendors are bringing solutions to this space and more to the years to come. What we are seeing also due to the fact that data is becoming an asset that's been consuming internally so much, we are seeing the explosion of data exchanges for internal and external use. So imagine if you are a retailer and you're acquiring data from some of your suppliers, from some of your partners, and you want to have a better understanding about the consumers who visit your e-commerce store or who go to your physical store. So you have a need for sales, you have a need for marketing, you have a need for operations, for billing, and so on. So the idea of creating a data exchange is allow the data to be better used throughout your enterprise. So that's another major trend that we're seeing this year. So can keep talking here for hours and hours of what's coming new, but what excites me the most is about finally companies, executives, the board levels, they understand the importance of data in bringing data to the business decision process, not just something that's out there just as a support function. Data analytics becoming the business itself.
Right. No, those are very interesting trends and, you know, frameworks, especially when you talk about the data fabric. You've mentioned that trend. And right now, as I'm building my technology platform for the talent acquisition and staffing world, we constantly have to evolve from a perspective of really building the self-service module for our clients to be able to utilize data to make certain strategic decisions based on the performance of their organization, taking into account the, you know, the industry trends, what are the things that are coming about, what other companies are actually experiencing. So that's, you know, that's super exciting. When you've touched upon kind of the whole premise of data consumption by the organizations, because we've been hearing that a lot, you know, past couple of years. You know, we are data-driven organization, we're focused on data, we make decisions based on data. But at the same time, it's something that's very, you know, it's complicated to stand up that type of environment. So what are some of the, you know, recommendations that you may have for the companies that are just embracing the kind of the culture, the environment of really data driven company. What are some of the things that you're seeing in the industry that really help some companies succeed and some companies that are staying a little bit behind?
Okay, it's a very good point. I would like to go back more than 200 years ago when the first insurance companies start to pop up, okay? And insurance companies, they start using data to predict in one of their process called actuarial, which is try to predict the lifespan of some people and so on. And if I'm sure it started in Scotland, okay? So the insurance business start to use data before computers, okay? So data has been with us for a long, long time. If you observe when we talk about global warming, for example, we always look at the data from the last 100 years. Hey, 100 years ago, we didn't have computers, but guess what? We're collecting data about the weather. So data has been a part of the human culture for a long, long, long time. What's happening now is the cost of storing data and the cost of using data with new techniques has gone tremendously low. With the advent of cloud computing, guess what? Hey, I can find storage that will cost almost nothing, and I can use the best techniques that exist out there that I don't have to pay a high price to buy computers or to buy that software because, hey, everybody's cloud, everything's cloud-based, so I just pay as I go. However, the weakest link on that chain is still the human being. Okay, we evolve so much in technology, we evolve so much in collecting data, we evolve so much in the process, but our brains are still digesting everything that's going on there. So the best recommendation that I suggest to any company is like, look at your people. If you want to become a data-driven company, if you want to use data for your decision process, if you want to change how you operate, and not just to be gut feeling, but data-driven, try to put together a compelling data literacy program. But don't call a data literacy program, call something else, call an enablement decision making or something that's very compelling in order to help your executives, your middle level management, even the folks that are there on the call center that on the pressure to do some volume, they need to do some activities. So it's all about helping the human folks who are involved in process, dealing with clients, involved with supply chain, involved with a business activity, to use that data as part of his or her process.
Right. No, that's super interesting. And you've nailed it on the head on a very kind of very relevant topic. In a sense, we hear a lot digital transformations, so all kinds of, you know, data transformations. But at the end of the day, everything starts with people transformation. If the people are not bought into the mission, people not bought into the vision what you're trying to build, none of the digital data transformations are actually going to make, you know, a lot of impact. So that's very interesting what you're talking about, really investing into the kind of the human capital, that element to be able to build that type of culture, that type of environment for data and analytics to really succeed. So that's very interesting.
That's true. And for any leader that's out there, it's about what the difference is going to be at the end of the day, what type of difference you're going to be making in order for you to retain talent, especially now that we are working remotely. Yeah. Not a lot of companies will ever go back to the old model to be everybody in the office. Mm-hmm. But how you can identify those trends, how data will help you to make a better decision, that if you do the wrong decision there, guess what? You're going to be losing talent to your competitor. You might be losing important talent. And when you're there, and our habits, consumer habits, have changed so much in the last 18 months, John. So right. Much. So probably our baseline that we had in all the consumer goods companies, the retailers and so on, they will need to reshape due to how we behave now, to things that we buy when we go to the supermarket, things that we buy online, totally different from the last year or last 2 years. So we are passing through a major transformation in everywhere in the world. This pandemic was global, okay, unfortunately. However, at the same time, let's use some of the silver linings that we're going to get out of here in order to make a better work environment, bring data to the decisions that we're currently making, because we're going to be living with those decisions for decades to come.
Right, right, absolutely. No, those are great points. And, you know, in general, I talk to a lot of executives like yourself almost on a daily basis. And it one trend that I'm able to pick up is that it's really almost when you at that executive leadership level, your main responsibility is really designing the system for your organization, whether that's your people system, whether that's your technology systems, and making sure that people are positioned to succeed from their very first day within the organization, whatever the case may be. So that's, you know, that's very interesting. When we talk about people, good portion of our listeners are obviously executives themselves, but also early stage career professionals. Those that are just coming out of, you know, whether in transition of, you know, career paths or like second year MBAs and so forth. Can you talk a little bit about the particular skill sets that are of extreme importance, yet very scarce these days, in order to succeed in kind of the data and the analytics space? Because it's inevitable. It's here to stay. It's only here to grow. So for those looking to build their careers from that perspective, what would you recommend to really focus on when it comes to specific skill sets?
Okay. So first, let me take a look from far behind. If you look at some companies nowadays, you have people who are like trainees, early 20 years old, and you may find some people who are over 70, mm-hmm. and you have everything in between. So in the work environment today, it became quite of diverse in terms of age. Of course, it became much more diverse through the years and decades that we're doing that. We're seeing women on leadership positions. We're seeing a lot of ethnicity and so on. So the work environment today, if you compare 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or 50 years ago, oh my God, it's so much diverse, which is positive, because when we say diversity is not just the diversity of gender and ethnicity and so on. It's about diversity of ideas, okay? Because our consumers became much more anxious for change. They are not as loyal as the past and so on. So when we look at the data analytics teams, what skills do we need? Oh my God, we need so much. Definitely we need people with the traditional IT skills on understanding how to program or to support an infrastructure and so on. Then with the advent of the new data analytics tools, we need people who have a good understanding on statistics, mathematics, or physics. We're going to do the modeling on everything. And then you have your infrastructure, then you have your data being manipulated by some fancy algorithm. But guess what? You produce a report, or you produce something that a good image. How are you going to convey a message to your stakeholder on everything that you extract from there? So new functions, such as the data storyteller, has been come up. We are seeing tremendous investment on data visualization. So it's not just a matter of having a tool for data visualization, but the skills for people to be great designers on how they use those tools. Another thing, okay, data is not an end per se, but it's a means to achieve something. So if you have a DNA organization and you are on a retail or a consumer goods or in a financial service organization, you better have in your team people who understand the nuances of those verticals. So it's quite important for you to have on your organization people who are not the best data people or the analytics people or the technology people, but people who can communicate with the business and can translate business needs to the more technical people that exist under your organization. And we talk about people being the weakest link on the chain. Okay, so I have created a solution, it's run on a platform, has everything great, but will the users accept that? What type of program do I have to put in order to train the users in what I'm talking here is about change management? So it's necessary to have people who understands about the human psychology in order to put the best training to change behavior. So when I look at the chief data analytics officer organization, we're talking here about a team that's made up of several skills that are going to make data to be part of the full decision process on any company. So the point is, it's not one talent. It's a mixed bag of talent. And guess what? You have a space for everybody. So for someone who's fresh out of school, don't be in a hurry to decide anything now. Because guess what? In 5 years from now, things will change a little bit. So the most important, I would say, skill that anyone, it doesn't matter age or skills that you have, the most important skill that you must possess is the ability to learn new things. Because guess what? This market is so dynamic. Something that's important now might not be as relevant in some years from now. So you always need to keep learning and improving your skills so you have a presence in the market.
Absolutely. I love that advice. It's almost that eternal drive for learning, that if you develop that early, it's, you know, it doesn't matter which direction you go in, doesn't matter what trade you select, it's your ability to absorb that information, seek out and become better from that perspective. So that's, you know, that's a great advice to an extremely loaded question. Mario, from a standpoint of utilizing data and analytics to drive innovation, I talk a lot about innovation, you know, on this podcast a lot, how to build and foster such cultures, leveraging, you know, the concepts of experimentation, things like that. Talk to us a little bit, you know, from a standpoint of data and analytics towards innovation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, innovation is how you change what you're doing, and the way that you change is going to be driving better results moving forward. Okay. So I read a book last year called Long Shots. I don't know if you've ever seen that book by Safi Bacall. It's a great book. So if you are interested in innovation, I would recommend take a look at that book because it's amazing. It helped me so much in put together our vision for Chief Data Officer 4.0 that we drove here at Gartner Research Board. Okay. I was looking at some patterns for what was happening in the role of the Chief Data Officer in the market. And during one of my business trips, and you stay in the hotels or in the airplane, I read that book. Oh my God, it opened my mind in terms of how you can start applying data and analytics in order to drive the change that you're trying to promote. And Safi goes into a lot of details from how the radar was creating on some industries related to life science and so on. It helped me so much. So if you're trying to promote a change, the first thing is, let's understand what we have here. Let's understand what we're doing well, what we're not doing so well. Let's try to establish some metrics and let's have a common framework that will help us to collect more data, to do some experimentations in order to see if what we're trying to make makes sense or not. The beauty about our role today, John, our world today, is that we can experiment in a much lower cost than in the past. Okay. If you need to create a version of a product, hey, you can try to create a minimal viable product online, experience via website. You can get some feedback if you're the right track or not. So I truly recommend that if you try to do something, an innovation, digital transformation, and so on, they are, again, just different facets of the same thing. Looking where you stand, try to put some hypotheses, do some experimentation that you can collect data and validate your hypothesis if you're right or wrong. Sometimes your hypothesis might prove wrong, and that's okay. You just learn a new way not to do something. Try another thing. So those things are so hand in hand. And I'm grateful that when I was doing here the work for the Chief Data Officer 4.0, we were able to collect so much data from the market, from the clients that we support, from other clients that we didn't have an interaction to see what they're doing and combine on that point of view of the future of this leader.
Well, that's very insightful. And thank you for those recommendations. You briefly mentioned the book that made an impact, kind of shaping your kind of the overall framework and thought process on that particular topic of innovation. Share with us what's your overall content diet is looking like. What are the different sources that you utilize on a daily basis to stay up to date, to stay ahead of the curve? Whether that's, you know, Twitter profiles or some thought leaders to blogs that you subscribe to. Curious, what are the different sources that you would recommend?
Okay, so fortunately, I work with a company that generates a lot of content.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I cannot keep with what our analysts write. Okay, so we have like 2,000 analysts and they write a lot of great stuff. So in the Gartner website, I have some keywords that are triggers. So every day I kind of receive a summary of those keywords on topics that are my area of attention. So I always try to read two or three notes that Gartner generates every day. Okay, I do that. But of course, it's not sustainable if I just keep insular inside Gartner. So I subscribe to a few newsletters that come from certain places. So there are some newsletters coming from MIT, from Harvard Business Review that I love. So some interesting points out there. There are some thought leaders on LinkedIn that I try to follow them in what they do. And I try to observe, because sometimes they refer some things that I don't know that are going on out there. It's quite important to have that overview that you can see what's going on. In terms of books, I try to read one book per week. And sometimes on those books that I read every week are in a subject not related to my work. Okay. And I try to read a lot of history books, try to understand what's going on. So when the pandemic started, I read this book about the Spanish flu. Okay. It was a book written by 2015 or 14 that analyzed how the Spanish flu, what happened, how the virus propagated at that time, what the population did, and how the humans came out of that crisis after that. So kind of prepare, okay, what might happen in this crisis here? What's going to come to us when the COVID is after us? So I always try to look at history to try to observe patterns that I can try to apply nowadays. Because remember, the data analytics, it's not new. We have been doing data analytics for centuries. We just call something different, okay? However, the change that came when we start having computers, the change that we have when we start better understanding about the human behavior, it's the principles are all the same. They didn't change that much.
Oh, that's very interesting. And thank you for those recommendations. We'll, you know, definitely highlight some of those in show notes. Last but not least, you mentioned a couple of books in some of your responses. Is there one that really stands out that you always recommend to others? And why is that?
You remember what happened to Cambridge Analytica and Facebook and all the issues that happened with the election the last few years. Mm-hmm. There was a book that I've read this year. It's about this company that was put together for the election in the 60s, and they started to do some work during the Vietnam War. Okay. And they were the first company who started to put together data for... try to understand the voters' behavior and how they target advertisement and so on. I think the book's called Simomatics or How the World Came to Be. I'll send the name after. But it's so funny talking something that was the computer power in the 60s was not as great as of today. Probably in your home today, John, you have more computing power than the whole world at that moment. And those individuals in that company, they put the best brilliant minds in that company to try to understand the behavior for elections, to influence elections, and also how they could influence the Vietnamese population in order to drive the war efforts, okay? So what I see sometimes, what I like a lot about reading history books, is that sometimes things tend to repeat themselves and fall in the same patterns.
Well, that's great. I love it. And we'll definitely highlight that in our recap of this episode. Mario, Ken, thank you enough for such an insightful conversation today. Personally learned quite a bit. I always say that to all of my guests that, you know, not only we're going to stay in touch, but also we're going to try to do another episode in about a year and see how much have changed, transpired, we can revisit the conversation we had, you know, a year ago, and see how much we actually were able to predict, how much we were completely off on. So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. You're doing such a great job. I appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts, and keep doing this great work, John.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.